Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Hello and welcome to the Millwall Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and of course the team from No One Likes Us Talking. It's Stan Godwin, James Kelly, Jeff Burnage, former Millwall chairman, and of course George Lampy. Happy birthday, George. You've chosen to spend your Friday evening and your birthday evening in a darkened soundproof room talking about Millwall, but each to their own.
Well, I was hoping that was going to stay secret, but no, obviously you've blown that.
Not a chance. Blown it early doors. And, of course, Neil Harris will be hoping that various pieces of transfer scheming remain secret this summer. We're hearing rumours of some targets starting to develop. Is there anyone you've heard of who the club could be after?
Well, obviously, we're looking at the goalkeeper at Bournemouth. That seems interesting. And the one that might be a bit disappointing for us is Dave Martin. It looks like he may be going to West Ham, which, you know, he did very well last year and last season, and I thought we would be our number one goalkeeper, and we might get a young fella in to be his number two. But whether the rumours are true or not, I don't know. But that would be quite disappointing because the fella was, I think he was head and shoulders above the goalkeepers that we had at the Den, and was one of the reasons we, you know, managed to stay up. I don't know what the boys think.
Well, I would tend to agree with that. I mean, to be honest, if he was to leave, it would be disappointing. You know, it would be, and because you're then talking about looking for not only a new number one goalkeeper, another number two. You know, so we're going to be, as it stands at the moment, we're short on the goalkeeping front.
Well, I was surprised to hear it, but look, he's 33. He's got family connections at that club. Who can blame him? I don't think it would be the biggest disaster in the world, but he did do well after the Brighton game, particularly reacting to what happened in the Brighton game. So more power to him. He did well for us, and time will tell. But the other rumour about goalkeeping, everybody, is that name, Aaron Ramsdale.
Is he any good? He's 21, he's playing for Bournemouth, there's rumours of a potential move to Millwall, a potential move to Huddersfield. If he signed for the club, would he be coming in as first choice? It's quite young for a keeper.
Yes, because we've all seen him play against us. Everyone's forgotten. He was the goalkeeper for AFC Wimbledon in the cup game that played against us, having got Tom King, our goalkeeper, out of the team. In my opinion, if he did come, it would be fight for your place, but I think he'd be coming expecting to fight his way into the starting lineup.
I think that's where we think he may have been number two to Dave Martin. You know, if he had come in and then he could have worked his way up this way, it leaves a little bit of a void. But 21, that's old enough for a goalkeeper.
It is. I don't think you'd get a Bournemouth goalkeeper, a Premier League goalkeeper, coming to a bottom half championship team unless there was a real prospect of him playing first team football. I would think Eddie Howe would want to know what the score was there. He played first team football at Wimbledon last season. Is he really going to want to be someone's understudy for very long? I was impressed with him at Wimbledon. First time I've ever seen him. First time I've ever heard of him. But I would think that one of the things that Neil can dangle in front of him is, look, we want you.
And that is a big draw.
Yeah.
In terms of keepers not wanting to be second string, from a Martin point of view, if he does go to West Ham, he's not going to be expecting to start, is he?
I wouldn't have thought so.
No, absolutely not.
No, I mean, obviously they've got Fabianski as their number one at the moment. He's, as you said, he's 33 years old. We were discussing this outside, you know, family connections. Also, if I'm 33 years old coming to the end of my career, I wouldn't mind taking Premier League wages to,
so
just,
it's a pay,
to sit on the bench. I think it would be, yeah. Because as we said, we know he's not going to get number one spot. So I think it would just be the case of him seeing his career out, really.
I think he came to Millwall as a number three goalkeeper, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, Jordan was the first choice goalkeeper the season before the one just finished. We borrowed Ben Amos from Bolton on the recommendation
of...
We already had
Dave by then, though, didn't we? I think we did, actually.
I'm not sure, but put it this way, he certainly started the season as third choice. He certainly did, because Ben Amos was the first into the team after Jordan was out of the team. So, but look, it's not the biggest issue in the world, and we don't really know the ins and outs of it, but I'd rather talk about Aaron Ransdale.
Well, who you're clearly rating very highly.
I can't say I rate him. I've seen him once against us for AFC Wimbledon. I'm not going to be one of those people, but I like the sound of it. And
well, you like the sound of his name.
It sounds like Norman Wisdom. Anyone? Mr. Ransdale, do you remember? Oh, no one's old enough. Never mind.
Mr. Grimsdale.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, Stan's old enough.
Yeah, no, we all are. Well, no, these two ain't. No, James and Johnny aren't. No.
Turning our attention to the other end of the pitch, we're hearing that some fans are calling for the club to have a look at signing John Marquis, who, of course, does have a history. He's looked very lively for Doncaster this season, as he always does. Scored for Charlton in that second leg of their League One playoff semi-final. Does this have legs?
Well, I mean, I'm to be honest, I just see that and I'd be absolutely amazed. I mean, put it this way, and this is my personal opinion. If I was in Joel Marquis's position and I was approached by Millwall, I would probably turn around and decline it. Because I honestly believe that John Marquis was treated badly by four Millwall managers. And every time he was playing before he left us permanently... When he was playing at Millwall, I can remember him coming on in one game. He was about 17 years of age, and they stuck him up front on his own, right? And he never, ever had a decent run in the side. And yet, when he left Millwall, went out on loan, he was in a front two, played week in, week out, and scored. And people used to turn around and say, and even now Millwall fans turn around and say, oh, yeah, we did it in Division One, but he couldn't do it at Championship level. Well, I tell you what, if he doesn't come to us but goes into the Championship, because Sunderland, for example, they paid £1.5 million. If they get promoted and buy him, and he's banging in goals week in, week out for Sunderland, I'm going to hear these people turn around and say, oh, well, he ain't good enough for the Championship.
To defend those people, if we look at his goal record, he was never really consistent before Doncaster. At Millwall, the point you make is important, that he didn't have a run, 5 in 52, but on loan at Staines Town, 6 in 7, impressive. But Portsmouth, 1 in 5, 3 in 5 at Torquay, none in 7 for Northampton the first time, 2 in 7 the second time, 1 in 13 for Cheltenham, 8 in 21 for Gillingham, 0 in 13 for Leyton Orient, 6 in 15 for Northampton. So it's only since 2016, and that's 61 in 134 for Doncaster, that he's really hit that form.
On figures, yeah, and a lot of those were in lower divisions than the Championship.
Mm.
I don't agree with Stan about him being treated badly. I mean, I wasn't around to know that or not know that. But I do know that one quality that Neil Harris has got is brutally honest with players. And if you remember, John was having quite a good time at Gillingham the year our promotion season. I might be wrong. Might have been the one before. And he wanted to stay there and they wanted to keep him. And Neil obviously gave him another year. And my guess is that he said, look, John, come back for another year. You're a Millwall boy. If at the end of the season you haven't nailed down your place, I'll let you go for nothing. That's what I think was said. And that's what happened. I don't think many people thought he'd get the goals that Doncaster he's got. And there is a question mark over, you know, whether it was a right decision or not. But I think Stan might be right in thinking that John would think, do you know what, I don't think you go back. Hope it works out better.
No, I mean, you're probably right, Jeff. But all I'm saying is if I was in his position and that, I would say no. Because I'd say to Harris, well, hang on a minute, you got me back last time and I didn't play. And I'm now an established player and I ain't coming back to sit on no bench, mate. That's what I'd be telling him.
I think that's a very good point. But is there the other side of the coin, which is equally, you don't want to go back somewhere because you've got a history. But might you want to go back for precisely that reason? He's a Millwall lad, came through the youth system. Might he want to prove himself to Harris and all of those original doubters?
Hasn't got much to prove now, has he? How many goals has he got? 27 goals or something in
League
One?
You know, and I hate to say this because Stan's going to rise up here, but they are in League One. You know, I don't think John is a Championship player. Now, if he goes to Sunderland, like you say, Stan, and scores a stack of goals, then I will come in here and say, Johnny, Mark, wish you well, are a Championship
player. Well, it's funny you say that. it's funny you say that.
Buckle up.
I remember, right, when we first signed Steve Morrison, and he comes to a fans forum with Alan Dunn, and he's sitting on the platform, and all of a sudden somebody starts talking about targets, right? Now, bearing in mind, we're talking about a bloke who at that point weren't even a Football League player. And this bloke says, Steve Morrison said, yeah, I have targets. And this bloke said, well, you got a target for this season? Oh, yeah, he said, 20 goals. And I sat and thought to myself, well, I hope you get it, because if you don't... Now, to be fair, he come in and did it, right? But if he hadn't have done it, he'd have never heard the end of it.
I think his final game for Stevenage, one of his final games, was at Wembley. Mm. I can't remember if it was a playoff game or it was the FA Trophy. I'm not sure now. Mark Beard was playing, if I'm not mistaken, as well in that game. Somebody ex-Millwall was playing. And he was very, very good at that level. He'd found his... But you could do the same thing to him as Johnny did with John Marcus's stats. You know, let go at Northampton after a few appearances, drop down to Bishop Stortford. Doesn't look great in the Rothmans yearbook, does it? That's dating me, by the way. Anyone got any of those now? Doesn't look that great, so recruitment's not that easy.
No, it's not that easy. And the only solution for all of you listening at home is to keep listening to the Millwall Fan Show, because in 6 months' time, we'll be sitting here and either Stan will be gloating or George will be red in the face. Coming up, we've heard about bringing players in from outside the club, but what about that youth system? Don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Millwall Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio with me, Johnny Burrow, and the team from No One Likes Us Talking. If you'd like to get in touch, perhaps have an argument about any of the things we're discussing this evening, that number is 0208 7020 558. And our next topic on the agenda is the youth system. Is it good enough, in a long-term sense, to sustain Championship-level football?
I would say, yeah. That's what I would say. I mean, but you see, we seem to have this... I mean, this is just my opinion, and Jeff might have a different point of view to me. And I know George has had in the past. But you see, my view... I generally take the view that the academy system, compared to what it replaced, in my opinion, is second rate anyway. Right? I don't think it's as good, personally. Right? Now, the thing is, you know, I read Scott Fitzgerald's interview in the Southwark News coming up here, and, you know, he's lauding the fact that we've signed all these players, eight players and whatever. OK, fine. I've got no problem with that. But the only thing that concerns me are, in a couple of years' time, how many of them players are going to have played in the first team? I'm not talking about sitting on the bench, right? Are they going to be given their chance? Because when you look at other clubs and you make the comparison... Right, you know, we're not there. Bristol City are a club, you know, there's an argument that George has pushed this to a degree. Well, when we get in the Championship, you can't afford to do it. Well, these other clubs can do it, and they have success with it. And the question is, why are we doing it, and why don't we have success?
It's very difficult to do it in the type of season that we've had, when we're struggling, you know, to avoid relegation.
It's not the time to gamble.
No, but it doesn't take away the fact that there is hardly anybody there who's been sitting on the bench from the academy or coming on and playing a game here and playing a game there. There's nobody, you know. Now, that has to reflect on all manner of people, but, you know, we should be seeing maybe at least one or, you know, a couple of guys coming through. I'm not saying they would play very often, but they should be showing their way, you know, into the team, whether they're getting appearances every now and again. We're not seeing that, and you have to ask questions.
Yeah, well, I personally believe that there should be a policy within the club that at least two players from the youth system get a first team appearance, whether it's on the bench or whether it starts every week. Last year, like coming towards the end of the season, we saw, you know, George Alexander get a chance. I don't see the point in having the youth system if you don't play the players. And also, you know, what have you got to lose? We've seen players in the past, you know, Ben Thompson, for example, come through the youth system and have done very well, and, you know, he gets the plaudits he deserves. So I honestly don't see the reason why we can't.
I think that's a really interesting point, James, particularly on that idea of a quota of someone who has to feature every week. But equally, you could take George's position and say, well, when you're asking what we have to lose, championship status, potentially, is it worth that gamble?
Well, yeah, but it ain't always like that. I mean, for example, and I'd mentioned, you got this thing on the agenda about Kelly, a guy called Lloyd Kelly, right? Bristol City. Right now, this is what I'm saying, right? The kid's 20 years of age. He was at Bristol City from 2011 till 2017 in their youth setup. Okay? 2017-18 season, he makes 11 appearances in the first team. Now, whether that's 11 appearances straight off the bat, I don't know. That was to score a goal, fine. Last season, he plays 32 times in the game, in the season. And he's just been transferred to Bournemouth for 30 million quid. Now, what I'm saying is, this is the point. This is what I'm saying to George. This Bristol City could have been in a relegation fight. Could have been, but they wasn't. But Kelly was in at the beginning of it. We're not asking to cut. What I'm saying is, we don't do that. Mm. Now, just to add further to that, right, they've now sold him. And in the same day, they've signed a player, non-league player, right, who... Lee Johnson's, what's the name? He's come from the National League South side. A bloke called Robbie Cundy they've signed him for. Now, it could well be that in a couple of years' time...
He goes to Bournemouth for 10
everyone's
million.
Everyone's going to be sitting here raving about this defender. And, oh, he's the Rolls-Royce defenders. And someone like George said, oh, yeah, but he come from Arsenal and he done this. And he didn't. He come from half a dozen non-league teams. Now, what I'm saying is, why is it they can do it, but we don't seem to do it?
Maybe we're about to. We have signed a non-league player. I can't remember his name. Is he from...
Rams. Is it Rams?
From Ramsgate.
No. His name's Rams Dunn or something like Rams, that. Yeah, sorry.
Where's he from? What team did he sign him from? Do you remember? Anyone remember?
No, I can't remember. I know the bloke. We'll see. Nuneaton Borough, wasn't it?
Can I just say, we have done it, right? You've got a short memory, Stan. It's not long ago that Fred was playing at 17...
Yeah.
Aidan O'Brien was playing at 17, mm-hmm. right? It's not that long. Ben Thompson was playing at 18. It's not that long ago.
No,
you do it when they're good enough to go in.
George.
And the acid test will be, of the 8 players they've signed out of the youth team,
right? Who can do it?
How many end up doing it? And we won't be knowing the answer to that for some time to come.
Right, okay, I'll put a different argument to that. You mentioned Fred, you mentioned Aidan. That would have been, something like bordering on 3 seasons now?
Yes.
Right, and what has happened in between?
Not much.
Aha, there
were not much. But
they're me cards.
But you do you do get fallow periods and periods.
Come in, Jeff. In all honesty, and I love our football club as much as anybody. Take the fellas away who took us up into the marvellous crop of young players we had. They have come through in dribs and drabs, and not many drabs either, have they?
Well, around that time, we also produced John Marquis. We also produced Lyle Taylor. We watched a playoff game the other day where we didn't know which of our ex-strikers we wanted to see win. Right? They both took a penalty, if I remember rightly.
Cracking penalty.
Right? It was difficult for me to watch that. It was difficult.
Is that just because you were watching it next to me, Jeff?
That was a big part of it, actually, yeah. But look, we'll move quickly on from that.
I'm loving about this Millwall show, by the way, is we're teeing you all up for arguments in the future. Because what's going to happen, and this is what it's about, because we'll be here next year, and we're going to be able to look at this and say, well, hang on a minute, are any youth players featuring? And the question we're then going to have to ask, which we'll come on to in future shows, is, well, if there are people not featuring, who is at fault? Is it the case that Harris isn't being brave enough? Or actually, is the development not working at the level we'd hope further down the line? But coming up, we're turning our attentions to off-the-pitch concerns, the wonderful charity For Jimmy. We're going to be speaking to its founder, Margaret Meisen, MBE, to find out about the wonderful work they do and also its special relationship with Millwall FC.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Millwall Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow and George Lampy, Stan Godwin, James Kelly and Jeff Burnage of No One Likes Us Talking. And it's a real privilege to also be joined on the line by Margaret Meisen, MBE, who is, of course, the founder of the wonderful charity For Jimmy. Margaret, thank you so much for joining us. Lovely to have you here. How did Jimmy's day at the Den come about?
It was in the very early days after Jimmy was killed. I don't even know really how it came about, to be honest with you. We were just invited down to the Den, and we were kind of friends with Rob Knox's family, who was also killed, who were Charlton, and it just was decided they had a Rob Knox day when they played at Charlton, and we'd have a Jimmy's day when it was at Millwall, and it's just grown from there. It's the highlight of our year, I have to tell you.
Margaret, it's George. Hello.
Hi, George. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. You've got a big day tomorrow, haven't you? You've got the Bridges Walk, I believe.
We have, yeah. And blow me down, it's raining out. So let's
say is it really? Would you like to tell us a little bit about that so people could...
Yeah, of course. The Bridges Walk came really when it was Jimmy's 21st birthday. And we were trying to think of activities to do, and someone came up with the idea of the 21 Bridge Walk of London. And so it's grown from there. So now every year it's our annual fundraising event. It's our biggest fundraiser of the year. And we have about 150 walkers. It's not just doing the 21 bridges now. We've kind of shortened it for families as well. So it's 21 bridges, 14 bridges and 7 bridges. And we walk through London, all in bright yellow T-shirts, raising lots of money. It's quite exciting. I'm only doing 14 bridges this year because I haven't been too well, but I'm going to do my best.
good evening, Margaret. It's Jeff Burnage. Hi, Jeff, how are you? I'm well. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Let me ask you. I can't remember when it first started. Did it start with 21 bridges, or did it start slightly shorter route than that?
No. It started with the 21 bridges.
It started
from Richmond. And we walked all the way to Tower Bridge. And let me tell you, it's a challenge.
Let me tell you, Margaret, I've been on it a couple of times. I live in Richmond. A bit of a posh boy.
That's the only bridge he does, though, Margaret. No, he just goes over that one.
George, you stole my punchline. I've never even made Chiswick Bridge, let alone anything else. But then
you know it's hard.
No, I do go along and cheer people on. Whether that counts as a contribution, I don't know. But look, can I say, you said something nice. You said that over the years you often said how well Millwall do for you and Barry and the family. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that Millwall fans think that you do a fantastic job for Millwall. You really project a marvellous image for the club. We need that because we're often talked down, and I think you and Barry do fantastic for us. So I really enjoy that day.
Oh, thank you. Do you know what, though? We've had so much support from Millwall fans that we just get really humbled by it, from the support from so many people. So our links to Millwall are just what really keeps us going. And I mean that. I'm not just patronising. I honestly do mean it. It's just, it's wonderful. So I want to say thank you to everyone that's listening for the support you give us. But these are the things that makes it easier when something so bad happens in your family. So thank you to all the Millwall fans. That's all I can say.
Margaret, do you think that you would like another joint day with the Knox family, Charlton Athletic supporters, next season? Or would you prefer to avoid that when they play Sunderland at Wembley?
Well, I've got to be honest, if I may. You see, I come from a Charlton family. So if my cousins are listening to me tonight, I've got to say I hope Charlton win. So I hope we have another Charlton Millwall.
Yes.
Because to be honest with you, Millwall won every time, I think, when we had the Charlton on Millwall day. So there you are. So it'll be encouraging. So, yes.
Very diplomatic there.
I'll be told off by my family if I don't say that.
Margaret, this is Stan here. I mean, you come from a you said you come from a family of Cheltenham supporters. Well, we've all got our crosses to bear, believe me. I mean, I've got one or two in my family, but this walk across the bridges interests me because some years ago now, and I'm going back but more than about 30 years now, but my boy played for a football team at the time, and we ended up doing this walk across the bridges. But I don't think we started off at Tower Bridge and then went west. But
to London Bridge, and that was it.
Yeah, a bit more than that. But as it happened on that particular day, I mean, because it's like if the weather's good, right? I personally found it an enjoyable walk. I mean, you know, so hope it all goes well, and hope the weather holds out for you.
Well, thank you. I don't know if all the walkers would consider it an enjoyable walk, but the one thing you don't need is the rain. Anything else is fine, but the rain is really, because you get so squelchy, your feet get squelchy, and blisters then start coming.
Right.
But I think it's going to be nice tomorrow.
What time does it start, Margaret?
Right, it starts at 9:15 in Richmond, but the 14 bridges starts at 1 o'clock at Putney. And then it's 2 o'clock at Embankment. So you're going to see lots of T-shirts walking through London. And it's exciting. I mean, it makes me so proud because we're walking for Jimmy. And I know that my lovely Jimmy would be so proud of everyone doing it for him.
I'm sure he absolutely would.
He'd be very proud of you, Margaret.
We are.
He would indeed. Margaret, talk to me about this wonderful work you do with Safe Havens. This was something I was reading about earlier today. Just explain what this offers young people.
Okay. Just to go back quite a few years, really, it started in about 2009. We worked with an organisation called London Citizens. We came together to see what could we do to make our streets safer after Jimmy was killed. 2008 was a particularly bad year for murders in London. I know it's got worse, but at the time it was bad. And so we come up with the idea of Safe Havens. And the idea of a safe haven is really making a shop a place of safety if a young person is in trouble. They can go in that shop, the shopkeeper will offer to get their parents or the police. And if the shopkeeper agrees to be a place of safety, a sticker goes on that window so a young person then knows they can go in there. But we work with the school, so it's not something we just go and say, can you put a sticker? We go into schools, work with the children, take them out up the high street and get them to go in the shops and say, would you be a place of safety if I'm in trouble? The shopkeepers nearly always say yes. So it's actually growing. It's not just about shops now. It's about businesses as well taking it on. So it is growing, but it's about rebuilding community because it's almost like our communities are falling down. I don't want to be old-fashioned and say going back years, but if we went back years, shopkeepers knew us. They knew our parents, and that seems to be changing. So let's bring that back a bit. But the safe havens are something that's popular, and we're getting requests now to do them all around the country. Sadly, it takes finances, as you know everything does, and I hate talking about money, but it does take money. So that's what we're actively raising money for now, to kind of spread it further afield.
Wonderful.
So if you ever see a sticker on a window that says Safe Haven for Jimmy, you know that that shop is somewhere that a young person can go into if they're in trouble. Deptford High Street, I think every shop is a safe haven. We're working in Lewisham at the moment and other parts of Lewisham. It's mainly in Lewisham, but you know, City Hall's a safe haven as well, if you're interested.
I was going to ask you about Southwark, whether you've got anywhere in Peckham or Bermondsey or those places.
There are a few in Southwark, not many. We are in talks with Southwark Council at the moment about taking it there. So watch this space is all I can say.
Well, if you want to do it in Peckham, then apply for a grant to the Peckham Settlement. I'll put a good word in for you.
The Peckham Settlement?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You still got contacts, Margaret, all these years later.
Margaret.
Well, that's what I like to hear. So if any of your fans out there have contacts as well, let us know, please.
Absolutely.
But honestly, do you know what, though? Our young people are so precious. We just have to do all we can for them. And if that makes making our streets safer, then that's what we have to do. And be determined and never give up.
Margaret, that's absolutely right. The work you're doing is just extraordinary. Thank you so much for doing it. Thank you so much for finding the time to speak to us. this evening. Margaret Mizzen, MBE there, of course, founder of the charity For Jimmy. And of course, you have got the walk coming up tomorrow, the 21 Bridges Walk, crucial fundraising event for them as well. Good luck for that. And anyone listening can join, get involved with the charity more broadly by visiting forjimmy.org. Wonderful stuff. Will any of you be backing yourselves to make it over more than just the one bridge?
No, just the one bridge and then straight to the pub.
That sounds like a very civilised Saturday to me.
What I normally do is go and watch them start, right? And then I go the shortcut round towards Kew Bridge and watch them come past.
And then
past,
you claim that you've won.
Right, and yeah, sort of like that. And then they don't always realise they haven't seen me again, the rest of the 19 bridges that are involved. But look, she's an amazing woman, Margaret.
An extraordinary person.
They're an amazing couple, and she's quick to praise Millwall for what Millwall's done for that family. But like I said while she was on the line, they project a fabulous image for Millwall Football Club. And their instinct to involve the Knox family at Charlton, not everyone would have thought of doing that or done that. And I just think they are precious people. And I'm glad we've talked about their walk today.
It's a wonderful thing. And it's also a wonderful thing to do in memory, of course, of their son. Coming up, we're going to be talking about the Lionesses again. Jeff Burnage, of course, is a former chairman of the Lionesses. Is it dying down? Is it getting feistier? We're about to find out.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Millwall Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and the team from No One Likes Us Talking. And last week, the focus of the show was very profoundly on the Millwall Lionesses. Of course, this very controversial situation where the ladies' side of Millwall have announced that they're splitting away from the club, starting a whole new team outright. Jeff, you're an expert in this area, although of course it is still a mire and we don't have all that much information. Is there any progress? Is this quietening down? Is there more animosity?
I think it's quietening down because it's almost reached the point where nothing can be changed, because who is going to be in what division is settled within the next few days. But like I said last week, to Millwall's credit, and I'm not part of Millwall Football Club anymore, but to Millwall's credit, they haven't stood in the way of these people, despite, I think, great provocation. Because if someone's going to come along and spend hundreds of thousands of pounds on promoting women playing football and girls, then they shouldn't be stopped. They should be encouraged. I think Millwall have done the right thing there. I don't want Millwall Lionesses to be cast down 7 or 8 levels and have to start from scratch.
And have their level nicked by a new team, in effect.
I'm not going to say that.
I am.
I'm not.
Okay.
I'm not. But I think that a reasonable outcome would be for Millwall Lionesses to play at a reasonable level, maybe even one division down. Unfortunately, I have to say, I can't see that happening. I think we're going to be cast down to the lowest level and have to start from scratch. And that would be 6 or 7 levels down from where we were. I think that would be a great pity. I don't think it can be stopped at this stage, but we'll see.
No, I think Jeff's right. And I think I don't see any way out of this, actually. I think the London City Lionesses, as they're called now, I believe, is... I think they're looking for new players. I see they're sort of getting up and running. I don't see what anybody could do with our new Millwall Lionesses coming along. They're not going to be as professional as these girls. And I can't see where... I know Jeff would, in his heart, he's talking from his heart, really. He would like them to see one division from where the girls are now. But, in a perfect world, they've got to drop down. They're going to be a completely new team with not much money, and the club are not going to pour money in, because otherwise the original Lionesses wouldn't be leaving us, would they? So we do have a catch-22 situation here.
Well, they've had a new team 4 years out of the last 5 summers. They're not unknown for starting a new with a new group of players. It tends to be like non-league football. It changes with who the manager is. a lot of the time.
But our community trust are going to run this team now.
It's going to come under the community trust. But look, I'll say this. Whatever division Millwall Lionesses are playing in next season, I'll be behind them. If it takes 5 years to get back to a decent level, I will be behind them. And I tell you what, Millwall fans put their hands in their pockets a year or so ago and came up with 17 grand when the club was nearly put into administration. And I know that money went to pay those players and those members of Lionesses staff in full. I've been assured of that. So Millwall does the right thing. And I think it's very unfair for the new people to say that Millwall were not in the slightest bit supportive. It just isn't true. They might have been less supportive in the second half of last season, but by then it had become clear what was going to happen, what it was going to be about. And I think London City have even said on their own website that they've been planning it for nearly the whole season. Yeah. So, you know, I don't blame Millwall for saying around Christmas time we'll blow that for a game of soldiers. We're not going to put money into people that are planning to leave us. And there are two sides to every story. I would like the FA to treat Millwall Lionesses as not a new club. I don't think it is a new club. We formed that limited company as a vehicle to be in the Women's Super League, which we're no longer in. But it looks as if that's what they are going to do. And the Greater London League Division 3 looks like where we might be going.
Do you think the FA have got this wrong?
I personally do, but I can understand if you look at the rule book for the pyramid, right? I can see where they're coming from. But as I've pointed out to them, I've tried to interfere, right? And I did say to them, if you read your rule book, before you get to the rules and regulations which say that any new team has to start at the bottom, it also says the aims and objectives of the pyramid are to make sure that teams and players are playing at the appropriate level for the standard of the players and the facilities that they play in. Mm. And that comes higher up on the first page.
And that's a very good point, Jeff.
So they
as well.
could be flexible.
Yeah, and it's not just from a Millwall perspective, of course, because if the Lionesses go into a much lower level with still a very good team and good facilities and batter everyone in that division, the teams currently operating in there aren't going to be thanking the FA either.
Well, that is a point. I mean, you could say that we'd be stopping someone from getting promoted if we were too good. I think that's a very difficult one to argue. But I would say this, that we had a development squad last season. I doubt that they'll all be welcome at this new place. I doubt it. They're going to have to drop. If they wanted to play for Millwall Lionesses, they'd be asked to drop down seven leagues. Our girls that are coming out of the Regional Talent Centre at 16 and should be moving on to something beneficial in standard, are they going to stay to go down seven leagues?
So we're going to see them poached, if not by the new club, by the other large clubs in perhaps the WSL?
Well, they'd be right to go because careers are short. And I always say players have got to become the best players they can be. But I fear that we're going to be starting at the bottom. And if we are, then so be it. We'll win a few games and eventually we'll be back. And but who knows? Common sense may yet prevail, and we'll know within a week or two what division Millwall Lionesses will be in the coming season.
If Jeff keeps knocking on their door long enough, he might change their mind.
I suspect he's doing more than just knocking on the door, isn't he, George?
Sadly, I've got used to this in my life. Sometimes the more Jeff Burnish knocks on the door, the more determined they are to ignore him. So there you are. That's my report on the Lionesses. I don't want to say any more than that, really.
No, that's okay. Of course, one door that Jeff Burnage spent a reasonable amount of time behind in his life is the boardroom door of Millwall Football Club. And coming up, we're allowing one of you in because it's time for Fan in the Boardroom.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Millwall Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio, and it's time for Fan in the Boardroom. I'm delighted to say that this week, Phil Roberts, Millwall fan, is on the line and is being allowed into that wonderful oak-panelled room. Good evening, Phil. Thanks for joining us. James, take us away.
Hi, Phil. How are you doing?
Yeah, James, doing very well, thank you. Thanks for letting us into the ballroom.
Thank you for coming on. So first question I want to ask, what do you think, how do you feel that this season has gone?
Yeah, well, obviously it was a pretty poor season from everyone's point of view, I think. Watching the season disappear with performances that were pretty good. You'd be winning games and you'd end up drawing and losing, and it happened time and time and time again. And I think, a lot of the fans were around, block three in the Kitchener, I must admit myself, and a lot of fans, leave most games pretty disappointed.
And do you think that maybe stemmed from how well we done in the season before? Like, no one expected us to finish in the top 10.
You're going to get excited by that, and it was great fun. But I think, trying to be calm about it, you can't just live on that and say that, that was we overachieved that season. I think the disappointing thing was players like Saville and Marshall leaving in the summer, and the style of football we played. And Neil needs to think about that, and a little bit disappointed with what he said about some of the players. And I'm sure there were lots of troubles in the changing room. But it comes down to the players having belief in the football he's playing, and that long ball football has also been criticised by hundreds of people around. And part of the reason why I think we didn't close out games and win when we should have done.
And just one more question before I let you talk to others. Do you think that perhaps maybe the lack of Tim Cahill may have had an impact on the season? Because if you think about it, when he came back to us in January last year, we went on that incredible unbeaten run. The spirits were so high. Do you reckon maybe the lack of a role model like him would have an effect on the team?
Yeah, I would say certainly by the same time this season, the morale in the changing room was probably much, much lower, and he probably did inspire a few players. Certainly Meredith seemed to have a good season, and he's not had such a good season this season. The other thing I'd like to say about Kale is when he came on for 5 minutes, he'd run round like a youngster and got booked about three times, whereas most of our subs who come on in the last 5 minutes in this season hardly lift a leg up. If you're going to get 5 minutes on the football pitch, you've got to put 110% effort into it.
I mean, it's George. Phil, hello, mate.
Hi, George.
You talk about the football we play, and this is an obvious of Stan. He goes on about this forever and ever.
Right.
But I wonder about this long ball football that you're talking about, and I wonder if it's a lack of quality in our team that helps create that problem. I'm sure they play to Neil's instructions, but, it's like, I mentioned it earlier, it's like a catch 22. When he changed the formation to have only Gregory up front, we played much better passing game in the middle, but we ain't got no blimmin' forwards. We only got the one forward, and unless you're getting up there with him, and I know Thompson did quite well, but it like creates another problem for you,
No. And I would definitely agree with that, but the other thing is having two strikers. When we play 4-4-2 and you kick a long ball up, if you don't hold the ball, you're giving possession away. So we used to spend minutes without a football, we'd have it for 10 seconds, kick it up front and lose it. And especially, at the back end of a game and you're trying to close it out and hold on to whatever you've got, and we let teams overrun us. I think more fundamentally, I think that the middle of midfield was weak this year, which is why he probably played the way he had to. But we let Saville and Marshall go, and we shouldn't have done. And we should have found a way of keeping them.
Phil, more broadly, what do you make of the way that financial fair play operates at Championship level? Do you think it creates an even playing field for all clubs?
I'd throw that one at Jeff, as I don't quite understand. I know business accounts and things, but I don't quite know how. I got a friend who supports Sheffield Wednesday told me they've just sold their ground to their owner to get over that rule.
Well, FFP, that What I'm baffled by, I don't know what either of those F stands for, but I think I've got an idea. Right? I want to take.
Is it an excuse, though, Jeff? Is it an excuse? We can't do that because it's financial fair play, you know?
A lot of things in life are brought in for a good reason, but you don't always see the other consequences by bringing them in. And the idea of that was to stop people spending money they hadn't got, going bust, and corrupting the whole idea of league football with promotion and relegation. Yeah. But the trouble is, linking it to people's income means that once an Aston Villa, always an Aston Villa. Once a Millwall, always a Millwall. So it's got those consequences. And no, it isn't an excuse. I mean, I'm no longer involved, as everybody knows. But I have to defend. Running a football club is really difficult. And that's something I didn't have to cope with, FFP.
So how did Middlesbrough manage to have all these players on high wages sitting on benches then? And Norwich as well. Where does that backfire on them?
What happens there, Phil, is that they've got these huge gates, haven't they? 20,000, 30,000.
They're going to outstrip us. No, you see, this is a fallacy. About 18 months ago, Middlesbrough were lucky if they got 14,000 in the ground. I have to tell you, Phil, what you're saying about the ball, long ball, I mean, this is music to my ears, mate. I mean, you're due for me, but what I'm saying, but you see, financial fair play, let me give an example. A couple of years ago, when I was on the MSC, we had a meeting with Andy Ambler when he was the CEO then, right? And what he said was, the season that we went down, the season when Neil Harris came in after Holloway had gone and whatever. What he said to us was, is that had we'd have stayed up, if Harris had pulled up, now what would have happened? All the Millwall fans would have been saying, oh, that's it, right, Holloway's gone, we've stayed up, get the money in and whatever. Yeah. We would have been transfer embargoed.
I'm
saying is, I accept that some clubs and some chairmen could be dubious and argue that financial fair play is an excuse, but by and large, mate, it ain't. And what I'm saying is, you can spend no more than £39 million over three seasons, but then you've got these problems. But
there's a broader problem as well, Stan, which we saw with Birmingham City this season, which is potentially, even though the rules are there and the potential sanctions are there, if the sanctions aren't that severe, what's to stop clubs just going, well, okay, I'm going to break the rules?
Well, the big one, of course, hanging over everybody is Manchester City at the moment. That is the big one. That's the elephant in the room because they found a way of getting round FFP and UEFA may well decide that it was a device and they were breaking FFP.
But
so
the
we'll
fine
see.
That we're hearing rumoured, the potential fine for City if they are found to have done anything wrong, and it's important to stress that as yet we don't have any confirmation of any kind that they were. They're talking about paltry fines in the scale of City.
Paint,
20 million
thing,
quid. They spent 66 on Mahrez. They don't care.
All that will affect clubs of that size is being deprived of being in the Champions League. That's the only sanction that will mean anything to them. Where Birmingham were concerned, I think there must have been some mitigating factors because what would normally have been 12 points was reduced to 9. So you could argue that Birmingham received no punishment whatsoever.
Well, quite.
Because they stayed in the same division.
Yeah, and the point of the season it came.
That was the biggest nonsense of all, Phil. I'm also including you in this conversation. Because Birmingham had done things wrong, but it went three quarters of the season before anybody took any action for it. Now, if we had taken action or, the people in charge had taken action early, people would have seen Birmingham below them. And psychologically, they may have stayed there. But because it ran the entire basic of the season, it was like nonsense.
Can I just say, Phil?
Can we bring it back to Millwall? Because I think just a different aspect of it. Obviously, I don't know about, the accounts and the 39 million and how it's all running. But what I think more strategically, when we, we've picked up Jed from Wolves, I don't know, Savile come from Wolves, did Marshall come from Wolves?
Yep.
No. Yep. No.
No, somewhere else. But we picked up good players.
Yeah, no, we did. Yes, sorry.
From bigger squads that are offloading players, probably through financial fair play. And then we let them go within a season. Now, I would have rebuilt Millwall around those two players. You've already got Jed there. They should have been the biggest wage earners in the squad.
Yeah, but the thing is...
Forget who your old mates are, who've been there a long while. These two guys say, OK, we're going to build our team around Savile and Marshall. Yeah, then we'd have had a chance of playing good football.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, Phil, in Savile's case, I mean, I know for a fact that when he was told that Middlesbrough wanted him, he wanted out. He wanted out.
Yeah. But was it because his wages were so low? If he was at a wage where he thinks, you know, if you've got to make a decision, I'm going to play first team football and might have a chance of being captain at Millwall, or I'm going to sit on the bench for another $5,000 a week, he might say I'll stay. But if he's earning peanuts, he's going to go.
Yeah. No, Phil, it's a very good point, and the sad fact is, it all comes back to money. It always does.
Yeah, it always does.
Phil, thank you ever so much for joining us. You've been a wonderful.
No, pleasure. Thanks for inviting me in.
Thanks, Phil. Cheers, nice Phil. To speak Phil. To you.
Wonderful thank fan you. In the boardroom, Phil Roberts, there, Millwall fan. Financial fair play. It's meant to make it all simple, and here we are arguing. I think we'll have to do it again. Of course, there is the question of whether Marquis is going to score any goals. So the only solution is you'll have to join us next week on the Millwall Fan Show.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.